Welcome to another inspirational My Church podcast. We hope that this message will bless and encourage you. To find out more about My Church, including locations and service times, please visit livelove.ca.
You guys doing good today? Good, good. So I got a word, and I really feel like it's going to hopefully encourage you guys today. But really quickly, on the internship, seriously, if you are thinking maybe you're in a gap year, maybe you're like, I don't know, not in a gap year, but you're asking big questions about what do I want to do, what do I want to be a part of, this is an internship that's designed not to just grow you to do church stuff, but also to just develop you as a leader. And this is the thing, that's, I know Pastor Caleb and Julie's heart too, is that ultimately we grow and develop leaders. And so we give you guys everything. We just finished updating the curriculum from the first year and kind of what we learned there and what we liked and tweaking things. And so we've got modules focusing on God's grace and basically developing that in you, developing leadership skills, everything from time management to personal finance, to budgeting, everything in between. And so this is the thing, if it is something that you feel like, man, I don't know, like, what is that? Maybe this is something I want to be involved in. I want to encourage you, take a step at least and come next week to the info session. And we'd love to just let you know kind of a little bit more in depth what it is, what it looks like, what the schedule is, and how you can maybe get involved in it. So want to encourage you to do that. Like I said, too, after this service, we're going to be hanging out at Jack Astor's. So I want to invite you guys to that as well. But what I want to do today is, so last week I was talking about this idea of the power of words. And so how ultimately when we speak words, they are not just kind of empty things, but they really do create a future. They frame people's future. And so the question is kind of, what are the words that have been spoken over you? What are the words that you're speaking over other people? And what is God ultimately saying about you? And so I want to kind of stay in the same vein of thought. And we're going to look at this interaction between Jesus and a guy named Zacchaeus. Now, Luke, in his gospel account of Jesus, basically he was writing this two-part thing. So if you don't know this, Luke wrote his self-titled book of Luke, and then he also writes Acts. So Luke was literally taking all of the history of the early church, Jesus' story, and then the history of the early church. But this is the interesting thing. He doesn't just kind of highlight Jesus' interactions on a large scale, like his preaching, his Sermon on the Mount. But what he does is he pulls out these moments, these intimate moments that Jesus has with people walking down the street, people outside the temple. And this really gives us insight into Jesus' character. Who is he? What's he all about? And why does it matter for us? And so this is one of those small engagements that he has. And it's in Luke 19. So if you're following along, you can write this down. I want to encourage you, take notes because it's just an easier way to remember things. So you should do it. But this is the thing. This is what it says in Luke 19, verse 1. It says, Jesus entered Jericho and made his way through the town. There was a man there named Zacchaeus, and he was the chief tax collector in the region. He had become very rich. He tried to get a look at Jesus, but was too short to see over the crowd. So he ran ahead and climbed a sycamore tree beside the road, for Jesus was going to pass that way. When Jesus came by, he looked at Zacchaeus and called him by name, Zacchaeus, quick, come down. I must be a guest in your home today. Zacchaeus quickly climbed down and took Jesus to his house in great excitement and joy. But the people were displeased. Well, he's gone to be a guest of a notorious sinner, they grumbled. Meanwhile, Zacchaeus stood before the Lord and said, I'll give half my wealth to the poor, Lord, and if I've cheated people on their taxes, I'll give them back four times as much. So I find this actually really interesting when you look at this verse. So basically, if we break this down, Zacchaeus has this totally 180-degree change in his life. So he goes from being this guy who's kind of reviled, and we're going to get a little bit more into Zacchaeus' story in just a bit, to all of a sudden turning around, and he's like, I'm going to give all of my wealth, I'm going to give everything back to the poor. That's a crazy thought when you really consider that. Now, on top of that, consider the interaction that he has with Jesus. Jesus walks up to him, he's like, hey man, I want to come over to your house. He's like, yo, my life has changed. Like, I just want to give like half of my wealth to the poor. That would be the greatest fundraising strategy. If you could just tell people like, yo, come over to my house. Like, hey, I'm going to just like cash out the RSP. Like, I got you, man. It's like amazing. And so in this story, Jesus just has this one sentence and all of a sudden Zacchaeus changes. Now to me, that asks a bigger question. is why did he change? How did he change that deeply that it actually affected not just his life and how he thought, but it affected his actions in such a deep and existential way? How did he change like that? This is the thing, is I think ultimately, if we look at our lives, there's places that we want to change. You know, and I think even more so, I think one of the greatest things that we want to change isn't within, but it's actually the people around us. You know, like whether it's a boyfriend, man, I just wish he would change. A girlfriend, man, I wish she would change. Maybe it's a spouse, not mine, but I mean, for all of you guys out there, maybe you want to change that. Maybe you want to change your kids. I don't know what it is, but this is the thing, is I think ultimately, at the beginning of the year, we all look at our lives and we go, man, something has to change. And then you look at Zacchaeus' story, and he has this one conversation with Jesus, and everything changes in an instant. What can we learn from this story? And so this is the thing. As we talk about this story and break it down, I want you to filter through two lenses. One, how do I change myself? And then secondly, filter it through the lens, how do I change the people around me? So let's start in a word of prayer. God, we thank you for today. We thank you for your word. We thank you that you're active in this city, in this church, that you don't want us to just come through today, but that you want to teach us and inspire us today, God. And so I just pray for every single person, God, that you'd encourage them by the end of this message. In Jesus' name, amen. So I was saying this morning, but there's this kind of cruel irony in life, is that I think some of the moments that you want to stick out the most, it feels like you're invisible. And the moments where you want to fly under the radar, you're just on display for everybody to see. I don't know if you've experienced this in life before, but I remember one of those areas for me was in high school. Puberty was not good to me. It was rough. I went through a lot of crazy changes all at once. You're like, why am I hearing this at church? It's okay. I remember I had, like, to give you context, I had dreadlocks basically from not washing my hair. So it was just a product of neglect. There are still some photos on Facebook, unfortunately. I had braces. It was like I was rocking like clothes that were like XXL. They were just like huge clothes. And then on top of that, probably the worst thing was I had violent voice changes. Did anybody experience that? Okay, like three people in the room. The rest of you are liars. That's all right. But it was like Mickey Mouse to Darth Vader in an instant, just like up and down. And I remember this one time in particular, I was in science class. I remember where I was sitting, back of the room. And in high school, you just want to make it through. Like, you know, some people have these amazing times. I still remember this one girl. She gave me a hug. She's like, man, our lives will never be the same. I was like, man, I really like, goodbye. I'm going to university. High school was cruel. It does get better if you're in high school. But this is the thing, is I remember sitting there, my science teacher, he asked me this simple question, and what came out was just this symphony of like highs and lows, and like the whole class is laughing. My teacher, when your teacher is laughing, like these people are trained to like try to respect you as a student. When your teacher's laughing, you're just like, man, I failed. But I know on the flip side of that too, there's moments where you want to stand out in the crowd. Maybe you've experienced this when you're trying to find that significant other and you do whatever you need to do to make yourself look good. Like, I remember, like, I'm not a huge, like, kids, they're like, all right, they're cool, they're okay. Like, for me, it's kind of like, oh, like, hey, how you doing? But when Rebecca was looking, I was like, man, like, check this out. Oh, man, you're incredible. I could be father material. Just saying, I'm just saying, like, I could do it. And we do this. I think it's like being, like, dating is probably one of the worst. Do we have anybody who's dating in the room? Oh, man, it is, like, sorry. I'm sorry that you have to go through. Dating is one of, like, the worst things ever. It's like being a used car salesman. It's like somebody comes on the lot. It's like, hey, so, like, what do you think? Like, anything? Like, oh, well, you know what? I'm kind of looking around. I'm shopping. It's like, anything though, anything, like, do you want to talk about any of it? Well, what's the history on that one? Hey, do you want to talk about anything else over there? Got this great thing, a credit card, some flowers. But this is the thing, and there's moments in our lives where we want to stick out and it seems like we're invisible. There's moments in our lives where we want to be visible and it feels like we're under the radar. Zacchaeus was the type of guy who stuck out in a crowd. And this is the thing, is I think sometimes it's lost on us in this text, but there's a whole bunch of context and culture and history behind what was happening. Because this is the thing, Zacchaeus' vocation was incredibly important. It actually meant something. It made him stick out in the crowd. Yeah. Now, a tax collector these days, well, there's still pretty much a universal hate for them. But back then, it was a whole different level. So if you can picture this, now, Jerusalem around this time, or Israel, it was under Roman occupation. So basically what would happen is the Romans would roll in, and after they'd occupy a city, they'd heavily tax it. Now, if you wanted to get as much tax revenue as you can, what are you going to try to do? You know, the Romans don't know the culture, they don't know the people, they don't know where the money's hidden. So what they would do is they would find locals, and they would get the locals to sell out and say, look, you know everybody here, you're well-connected, you know all of these people, so what we want you to do is, if you can meet our tax quota and get all of this money from all your friends and families and neighbors, then you can just make whatever you want on top of that. Doesn't really matter to us. We'll turn the blind eye. So literally, a tax collector was like the worst type of person you could imagine. These were the people who looked at their country, who looked at their people, who looked at their neighbors and said, no, I don't care. So Zacchaeus would have stuck out in a crowd. If you were walking down the street and you saw this guy, you would have acted differently. Conversations probably would have been muted around Zacchaeus. This guy stuck out in the crowd, and yet as Luke is writing this story, the irony of it is a guy who usually stuck out in the crowd is lost in it. And he's trying to find his way, and he's trying to just get this picture of who Jesus was. And so all of a sudden, we kind of know the story. Zacchaeus, he climbs up in the tree. But this is the thing for me, how I would kind of see this story playing out. Because ultimately, Zacchaeus just wants to see this guy. Jesus is basically like a traveling speaker. He's a bit of a celebrity. And so all these people are around. Zacchaeus just wants to see the guy. And so I can picture it looking like this. Zacchaeus gets into the tree. Jesus is walking, taking selfies. He's like, hey, how's it going? There's like kids and everything. He leaves. He goes, does his thing. Zacchaeus goes home. Dear diary, Jesus, yeah, he was cool. A little bit shorter than I thought. Wonder where he gets those blue sashes. Like that was, to me, that's how the story would kind of play out. And yet Jesus is walking, he has this crowd pressed against him. He has all these people around him, and yet he stops and he looks at Zacchaeus. And the beginning of this interaction is Jesus stopping and seeing. It's a crazy thought that God holds history, he holds the universe, and yet he stops and sees each one of us. And so when you really consider this, what happened was is that ultimately has implications in how we live our lives. The fact that God isn't just this distant kind of person, that God isn't just kind of far off and he kind of knows who you are. He's kind of involved in your life. If you pray hard enough, then he'll turn his gaze towards you. But Zacchaeus, just looking to see him, God all of a sudden turns around and sees Zacchaeus. But this is the crazy thing, is Jesus sees something different than the rest of the crowd saw. Yeah. The crowd looks at Zacchaeus and goes, Jesus, what are you doing? Why are you looking at this guy? Why are you giving this guy the time of day? And yet Jesus sees the same guy, but with different eyes. Yeah. This is the argument that I'm going to try to make today, is when it comes to changing, when it comes to changing ourselves, when it comes to changing the people around us, ultimately, I think the greatest thing that we can do is start to see ourselves the way that God sees us. And I think that that's the beginning of true lasting change, not just momentary change, not just aesthetical change, but actual lasting change has to do with changing the way we see ourselves to the way that God sees us. And so with the rest of the time that we have, I want to explore this idea. You know, what is it about Jesus? What happened that it changed things when he saw Zacchaeus? So if you're taking notes, write this down. Firstly, I think the crowd saw a title. Jesus saw the individual. The crowd saw a title. Jesus saw the individual. So this is the thing. I think a normal human reflex, one of our tendencies, is to understand people. We like to label people or put a title on people or put people in a box. And now I think that's not totally a bad thing. I'm not saying that you can never refer to somebody as a grouping of people. God did it all the time. There was a group, there was a tribe of Israel. But this is the thing, is that ultimately I think so often what we can do is we can see people for the title. We see people for the best aspect of who they are or the worst aspect of who they are. You know, I wonder, what are the titles that have been spoken over you? Maybe it's rejected. Maybe it's lazy. Maybe it's a good title. Maybe it's smart. Maybe it's pretty. But maybe this is the thing, is I think so often whenever we put titles, people can't see anything but that title. You know, and this is the thing, is we're not two-dimensional people. There's more to you than what people see. But ultimately, when you look at this story, what did the crowd see when they looked at Zacchaeus? They saw a tax collector. They saw one thing that defined this guy. There was one thing that would change and shape all of their interactions. Because of that one title, people wouldn't talk to him the same. Because of that title, people wouldn't interact with him the same. Because of that title, people would keep their distance. I wonder for you, if there's a title that's been put over your life, if there's a title like not good enough, if there's a title like lazy, if there's a title like unequipped, I don't know what it is, too young, too old. But I think so often in our lives, there's things and labels that are put on our lives. And yet, this is the thing, it was actually a true title. It was truly descriptive, and I'm not here today to say, like, man, see yourself the way God sees you, and there's actually nothing wrong with it. Hey, you know what? Welcome to church. We're all human. We're all going through stuff. Let's just put it on the table, right? That's the truth. But Jesus doesn't see that first. Jesus could have looked at him and said, tax collector, come down. But what does he say? He says, Zacchaeus, come down. And he speaks to him by name. Listen to what the Bible has to say about this idea. Isaiah 43:1 says, "Now, O Jacob, listen to the Lord who created you. O Israel, the one who formed you says, 'Do not be afraid, for I have ransomed you. I've called you by name, you're mine.'" John 10 says this, "The gatekeeper opens the gate for him, and the sheep recognize his voice and come to him. He calls his own sheep by name and leads them out." See, this is a crazy thought. God doesn't look at humanity as just this big grouping of people. He doesn't look at life as just kind of this big thing that's moving along and he's kind of pushing it through history. But he actually looks at each and every single individual and says, no, 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 when I paid that price, when I died, I actually died for you. And I wish I had time to say each and every one of your names, but we don't. But this is the thing, is God knows you by name. He calls you by name. There's something that's much broader than your title. There's something much broader than just kind of categorizing you as stupid or smart or whatever it is for you. You fill in the blanks. But Jesus looks at this guy and he could have said, man, tax collector, get down. And the crowd would have known exactly who he was talking about. And yet he calls him by name and says, Zacchaeus. So this has implications. This ought to change us for a couple reasons. Firstly, is I think it puts value on each and every single person. Like I said, we're more than just our best day and our worst day. We're more than just our strength and our weakness. God actually has this intrinsic value that he puts on each and every one of us. You know, as well, it shows God's involvement. That when God calls you by name, if he was thinking about your name, if he had your name in mind when he died, then that must mean that you have some value attached to your life. So that must mean that God is actually interested and involved in what's happening in your life. And so this is the thing. This ought to change how we see ourselves. If we start to see ourselves the way that God sees us, we can start to realize we're more than the labels. We're more than the titles. And this does something. Firstly, I think it breeds understanding. This is the interesting thing about a label, is it does a couple things. When I say a label, there's some implicit things that happen. If I said, man, you're lazy, what I'm actually saying as well is that I'm not lazy, or at least I'm not as lazy as you. So there's actually superiority and inferiority built into that. As well, it actually distances me from your experience. Well, hey, that's not me. I'm not going through that. Man, I'm not like him. I'm not like her. So my experience is now further away. And yet this is the thing, is when we start to realize that God calls each one of us by name, that we each have the same value, that we were each bought by the same price, but we're each qualified in our imperfection, it starts to level the playing field. And all of a sudden, I can't just call you lazy without looking at myself and going, man, well, I might not be lazy, but God saved me in this area. Man, I might not feel that rejection, but I do know what it's like to feel like this in this area. And all of a sudden, it levels the playing field to realize that we're actually all humans, all in need of a savior. I wonder how that might change you trying to change the people around you. man, well, you really need to get a little bit more discipline. Well, maybe you need to get a little bit more discipline. Yeah. Or maybe you need to grow in a certain area in your life. Yeah. Man, I can't believe it. If you just did it like this and like this, then you'd be okay. Well, maybe we need to look at our own lives and see that God is weaving his grace throughout our lives. It levels the playing field. As well, it incites action. You know, there's even things that we do. We label people and go, man, well, there's a whole bunch of poor people. I can do nothing about it. Each one of those people, though, with need has a name. Each one of them has a story. Each one of them was equally paid for when Jesus died on the cross. So that ought to make us and incite this action in us that goes, man, there's this value over humanity. I can't just look at this aggregate problem and go, man, I don't want to be a part of it. But it actually makes me go, man, I need to be involved in this. Because I know what it's like when there's somebody in my world who's going through something. Man, I jumped it. Like, it's like, man, I want to get involved in their life. This is the thing. The only difference is you don't know them, but God knows them. And he has the same value that's placed on top of them. And now this is the thing, we're not God, and I'm not trying to like put this kind of like cosmic weight on all of us to go, man, you have to save everybody today. Like we're all human. Let's keep that in mind. But what might this change with your neighbor? How might this change your boss? How might this change your coworker? If you start looking past that thing, oh man, he never gives me feedback. Well, man, you know what? There's some things in my life too, and I'm gonna approach it with a little bit more grace. Man, that person, they're so lazy. Well, you know what? There's some things happening in my life, and they still have the same value that I have because we were all saved by the same God. So, man, maybe I can give them just a little bit more space to be them and just love them through it. All of a sudden, this starts to change the way that we change ourselves and change the way that we change each other. And this is the other one. It increases our confidence. You know, when you have somebody who calls you by name, God, like the creator of the universe, knows you by name. Like you're on the VIP list. Like you're on the guest list. It's a pretty big deal. And man, that ought to give you some confidence that no matter what title's been spoken over you, no matter what words have been spoken over you, that there's a God who has a much bigger voice, a much bigger vantage point. And when he looks at you, he sees you by name. You know, the crazy thing is, and actually somebody in the 10 a.m. service came up to me, and he's like, do you actually know what Zacchaeus' name means? I was like, no, I didn't look it up. He's like, it means pure and clean. Wow. What an interesting thing. Wow. Is that when God speaks our name, he speaks identity and purpose into each and every one of us. That's a crazy thought. He knows you by name. He's not looking at the title. He's looking at an individual. Secondly, if you're taking notes, write this down. Society saw failure. Jesus saw a friend. Zacchaeus, he said, quick, come down. I must be a guest in your home today. Now, this is the thing. I think, again, some of this can be lost on us. But this is a weird series of events. So picture this. Imagine this is the crowd. Jesus is there. He's like, yo, Brent, I'm coming over to your house tonight. You're bringing the steaks. I'm going to be there for 6:30. It's like, whoa, what? Like, That actually shows it's kind of rude. But when you start to understand the culture, you start to realize that this was actually the only way that Jesus would be able to get into this guy's life. Firstly, what did meals mean in the Jewish context? Well, firstly, they meant hospitality. So basically, when you were inviting somebody over, you were inviting them into relationship. You were inviting them into friendship, not dissimilar to today. When you invite somebody over, it's actually an invitation into friendship. And this is the crazy thing about Jesus, is in this context, he could have said anything. He could have looked at him and spoke the truth and said, Zacchaeus, man, you've really messed things up. But look, if you get clean, I'm going to come to your house and offer you friendship. But this is the crazy thing. Before Jesus ever asked Zacchaeus to change, he invites him into friendship. And he says, man, hey, I want to be your friend. I want to get to know you. I actually like who you are. That's a crazy thought that God, before he asks us to change, invites us into friendship. Think about John 15:13. Jesus says, greater love has no one than this, than someone laid down his life for his friends. Jesus laid his life down for us. So what does that mean? He actually calls us friend. And he called you friend before you could reciprocate anything. He called you friend, not just on your best day, but on your worst day. Yeah. And this is a crazy thought that Jesus, that God actually comes down and he looks at our lives. He looks at our individual lives and says, look, before I even ask you to change, and Jesus never even asked Zacchaeus to change, but he just says, I want relationship with you. I want to know you. I want you to know me and experience my love. He invites Zacchaeus into this incredible, incredible friendship. And that's a crazy thought. But this is the other thing, is not only that, Jesus actually lost reputation. So especially for the religious elite around that time, to go to a meal was actually, you had to match your social class. You had to match yourself in the social hierarchy. So you wouldn't go to a meal of somebody who was lower socially than you. Now, a tax collector was about as low as it could go. It was like, there was not too much else down there. So a Pharisee, most Pharisees, they were basically religious leaders. They would not go to a tax collector's house because they would look at their lives and go, well, look, if they're sinning like this, then they're probably not actually seeing any or regarding any of the ceremonial traditions. If they're not doing that, then they're unclean. And if I eat with them, I'm going to be unclean. So I can't have anything to do with these people. And yet Jesus, what does he do? He says, no, I want to be this guy's friend. And the crowd is like, are you serious? Like, imagine if this took place today. Literally, I think so many people would be so deeply offended by Jesus on a ton of different levels if he was here today. Like, if it was on Facebook, you would have all of those memes and everything, like, hashtag not my rabbi. Like, it was like, it would be a really, really bad thing. And yet Jesus looks at this scenario. He looks at Zacchaeus, knowing what the crowd would say, and says, I want friendship with you, and I don't care what anybody thinks. When Jesus looks at you, that's what he does. Before he asks you to change, before he asks you to figure out that thing that you've been struggling with, he goes, man, I like you, and I want to get to know you, and I don't care what the crowd says. I don't care what people say, because I love you. You know, Paul puts it like this in Philippians 2. He says, have the same attitude that Christ had. Though he was God, he didn't think of himself equally with God and as something to cling to. Instead, he gave up his divine privileges. He took the humble position of a slave, born as a human being. And when he appeared in human form, he humbled himself in obedience to God and died a criminal's death on the cross. See, Jesus didn't just lose reputation for us. He lost his life. And that's a crazy thought. And I remember as I was writing this a couple days ago, I actually felt offended by putting that down. That God has such a high view of me before I would ever change. That God, who doesn't have to, he's bigger than all of it. He's bigger than me. My life is just a small blip. And yet he says, man, this life has value. I know you individually. I want friendship with you. And I don't care who I have to, it doesn't matter if I debase myself. It doesn't matter what I look like. I want to know you. Man, if we start seeing ourselves the way that God sees us, I think it might change something. Man, how might that change you trying to change somebody else? I think so often the church is notorious for, man, if you want to come, you better change. And we almost have this philosophy that, or at least, I mean, it's just bad PR probably, but this philosophy that the world thinks, man, if I come to church, I need to change, and then I can go to church. I remember talking to a guy, like, man, yeah, I finally, like, I'm so glad to be back here. I finally got my life straight again, and I'm just glad to be here. I'm like, man, like, you were welcomed here at your worst and at your best. And yet so often what we'll try to do, and especially in relationships, is we'll look at our relationships and go, man, if I can just change this area in you, if you can just get this area together, then we can be close. Then we can have relationship. Yeah. And yet what does Jesus do? He goes, man, you know what? That's where you're at, but I still want to love you. Yeah. I still want to see you. And that's a crazy thought. Yeah. Maybe when it comes to relationships, we need to stop trying to change people and just start offering love without condition. Because ultimately, when we actually look in trying to change people, I think that sometimes there's this undercurrent of, man, I'm actually doing the right thing. It's for them. It's actually for you. It really is. Because what you're saying is, man, my relationship and my love is contingent on you doing this. And yet God, the spirit that Jesus has is, man, I'm going to just give you love freely. You may change, you may not. But this is the thing, is I know that whenever the grace of God is in somebody's life, it ultimately changes who they are. What if you just started infusing God's grace into every area where you want to change? What if you stopped looking at, man, I need to get right first, then I can be okay with God. Man, that spouse needs to get right first, then we can have relationship, and just start serving and saying, man, I'm going to make this about somebody else. I'm going to make my life about somebody else. I'm going to invite the team up. But I think this is a crazy thought, is that Jesus looks at our lives and he goes, man, it's not about what you're doing. If you never reciprocate this friendship, I still gave it to you when I died on the cross. That's a crazy thought. And when you look at Zacchaeus' life, what does Luke do? You know, I think Zacchaeus, he actually changed before he got down from the tree. This is all still happening in the tree in a sentence. And yet this is the crazy thing, is that Zacchaeus would get down from a tree that Jesus would get on. And not just for Zacchaeus now, but for each and every one of us. And this is my last point, is that the crowd saw a sinner, but Jesus saw a saint. The crowd saw a sinner, but Jesus saw a saint. Let's read this again. It says, Zacchaeus quickly climbed down and took Jesus to his house in great excitement and joy. But the people were displeased. Man, he's gone to be a guest with a notorious sinner. They grumbled. Meanwhile, Zacchaeus stood before the Lord and said, look, I'm going to give away half of my wealth to the poor. And if I've cheated people on their taxes, I'll give them back four times as much. And Jesus responded, salvation has come to this home today. For this man has shown himself to be a true son of Abraham. The Son of Man came to seek and save those who are lost. This is a crazy thought. Is that the crowd looked at Zacchaeus, and if there was one label that they would hold on to, it was that Zacchaeus was a sinner. Now, actually, tax collectors, literally, this is what one Pharisee said to Jesus when he saw him in another passage in Mark chapter 2, eating with these people. The Pharisee saw Jesus eating with tax collectors and other sinners, and he asked the disciples, why does he eat with such scum? This is the religious elite of the day going, man, Jesus, you've got this wrong. What are you doing? See, people back then actually believed that the Messiah, that Jesus would actually come to free Israel of people like him. So what they actually thought is the Messiah would be this military leader. He would come, he'd wipe out the Roman Empire, and so these tax collectors would be a part of it. And they pushed them to the side. And literally, these Pharisees have a different category for sinner and tax collector. That's how much they revile these people. Zacchaeus was a sinner. This is the thing for a tax collector. When you actually think about what Jewish culture was, the law of Moses was a religion, but it was also governance as well. So literally, as a tax collector, he was rejecting the Jewish government, and he was also rejecting the religion. By going, I'm going to subvert it, and I'm just going to take what's mine. I'm going to take it and give it to these people. So there was a level of truth. This guy had literally pushed himself away from society. He'd become a prior in society. And Jesus looks at him, and Jesus would have been accurate to say, you're a sinner, come down. You're a sinner, you need to change. And yet, what does Jesus say? He looks at him, he says, man, this guy here, this is a son of Abraham. No, this guy is a saint. This guy's got it all together. Listen to what Paul says in Hebrews 4. This is a beautiful verse. He says, so then, since we have a great high priest who has entered heaven, Jesus, the Son of God. So Jesus is referred to in the Bible as a high priest. Let us hold firmly to what we believe. This high priest of ours understands our weakness, for he faced all of the same testings we do, yet he did not sin. So let us come boldly to the throne of our gracious God. There we'll receive his mercy and we'll find grace to help us when we need it most. See, this is the crazy thing, is that ultimately I think the world sees the deficit in you. Our world loves to see our sin. Our world sees where we miss the mark. And yet when we have Jesus in our lives, he stands in front of God. And so when God looks at you, he actually sees Jesus. He actually sees someone who overcame every obstacle, who lived out this life in perfection. He's not looking at your sin, but he's looking at your Savior. He's looking at Jesus and going, I don't see that sin in your life. I don't see those areas in your life. I see what Jesus has done for you on the cross. See, that changes how we live. See, what people used to do is the high priest would give a sacrifice on behalf of the whole Israelite community. And so this was a time of a lot of anxiety. They would come and God would come down in thunder and lightning, and there was this sacrifice, and if God took it, then everybody was good. If God didn't, then people died. And so there was this fear attached with coming to God. And yet what happens is when Jesus is our high priest, it changes things. And Paul, he basically changes the script. He says, man, we don't have to approach God timidly going, man, I don't know if I'm good. I mean, I did this thing that week. I did this thing the last week. I don't have this thing together. There's this title spoken over me. I don't think I'm good enough. And yet Paul says, no, you can boldly go in front of Jesus. You can boldly go into the throne room, because in that place, God sees Jesus, and there's more than enough grace for your best day and your worst day. Jesus doesn't see you as a sinner. He sees you, or God doesn't see you as a sinner. He sees Jesus. He sees you as a saint, and that changes things. This is the thing. I find it interesting what Zacchaeus does. The step that Zacchaeus takes after hearing all of this. So far, Jesus has just said, hey man, come down, I want to come to your house. And Zacchaeus is starting to be changed. Jesus never asks him to change, but this is the crazy thing, is the gospel, when you have the gospel, it still speaks truth, but it says in the Bible that Jesus came with grace and with truth. And so all of a sudden, what starts to happen is Zacchaeus just starts to change as a result of the goodness of God. And he says, man, I'm going to give away half of my wealth. That's a crazy thought, that on account of this guy, everything starts to change. And this is the thing, in that moment, Jesus wasn't just there to save Zacchaeus, he was there to redeem him. Money was the thing that alienated Zacchaeus from the rest of the community. His love for money, it actually pushed him away from the community. It pushed him outside of community. And yet God in this moment starts to redeem the very thing that alienated him and use it for his purpose. Imagine what would have happened giving half of his wealth. All of a sudden, there's this new stimulus in his community. All of a sudden, people who were wronged are being made right. And so all of a sudden, there's this change that happens in this community. This is the thing, is that in those places where you need to change most, when you let God infuse his grace in those moments, he has the ability to paradoxically redeem the very things that you feel have alienated you, redeem the very things and titles that have been spoken over your life negatively. God can use it and reverse it for his purpose. And in this moment, God doesn't just save Zacchaeus. He redeems his life. He redeems the things that he has. And Zacchaeus goes, man, since I've been changed, I want to use these tools that I used to use for myself. I want to use them for other people. I wonder what titles are going to be testimonies to somebody else. I wonder what things that have happened in your life are actually going to speak and give encouragement in life to somebody around you. This is the thing. I think sometimes we need to stop trying to change the people around us, stop trying to change ourselves, and realize that when you look within, there's no capacity to change. But when you look to Jesus in the gospel, it is the true substance of changing deeply in this life.
Thank you for joining us today. To find out more about My Church, including locations and service times, visit our website. And if you'd like to support the ministry of My Church financially, you can do so by following the giving link at livelove.ca. Thank you for partnering with us. We pray this message has blessed and encouraged you.